All right, we come back. Jai Ma. There is a line in Shobindo's poem, Who? Very beautiful, interesting line. Shobindo says, we shall tell the whole world of his ways and his cunning. This is the book where he is telling all about his ways and his cunning. And actually, if we look at this world impersonally and universally, it's really a marvel, a magic. As a doctor, I used to wonder that how come one small little seed inside the womb, how it develops into a baby, and then it has a journey, it will become, probably it will one day study those cells, conduct deliveries, become a conqueror and a sage, and all the process. It's amazing. It's actually, it fills us with wonder. And Shobindu is step by step raveling the mystery, because we have simply left it unanswered by saying, well, God's will, infinite. So what is there? How does he is there? He has an infinite operating system that we understand, which is a system and no system. So to us it looks like random. But there is within it a logic, the logic of the infinite. That is how Shobindu says in Savitri, that he, mean man, right now he is schooled in the early school of logic, must learn the schooled in the grammar of the intellect, must learn the logic of the infinite. So this is what we are reading, and see how he says. Page 344. Okay, let's start from page 343. Page 343, last para. But the being and action of the infinite must not be therefore regarded as if it were a magic void of all reason. This is important. Meaning thereby, we expect the same result every time. The moment I pray, it's like an ATM machine. I put a prayer in the slot, maybe with some money, and the result should come. The more the money, the more the result. It may be the other way around, all the money goes away. No result comes. Be careful when you invest in God. If you do it with the idea that I must get this, maybe he'll take all of you, the money, and then the man with the ATM machine. That is his ways. Cunning. So there is a line in one of the poems, Aiso Chatur Khiladi. You know, that's why that famous poem, which one of our favorites, Chaurasya Chauram, some people must have heard, sung by Pandit Jasraj. Now some new singers have also sung it. That he is the thief of the thieves. How they work. So see, here it is. Its way of being and of action must be the way of the infinite. No, we are here. Okay. But it is not a mental or intellectual, it is a spiritual and supramental logic. So there we come. It is a greater reason, a greater logic, because it is more vast, subtle, complex in its operations. It comprehends all the data which our observations fail to seize. It deduces from them results which neither our deduction nor induction can anticipate, because our conclusions and inferences have a meager foundation and are fallible and brittle. So first thing is, our data is incomplete. We base the data based on the surface moment with our limited senses. So first thing is there. That's why Arjuna asks Sri Krishna, sir, one, may I ask a question? He says, yes, you are asking questions only. You are not ready to do what I am saying. So he says, why this special grace on me? After all, you know, he is perplexed. I have only asked, what should I do? And he is revealing the whole universe. And all of them are watching. Bhishma is watching. He says, I wish I could hear. Yudhishthir says, I am the most righteous man. Why I am not chosen for this dialogue? And all the Mahatmas, what is happening between these two? So, then Krishna says, you know what, Arjun, you are dear to me. You are specially dear to me. Now, you know, Arjuna is perplexed. He knows. He has treated him like a friend, not like some great guru or somebody. He said, why is he so dear? And then Sri Krishna tells him, you know what? We are paraphrasing. Sri Aurobindo spoke about this to Charuchandra Dutt. We have fought the battle of the ages. We have been together for lives. You know what, Arjun? You have forgotten about it. But I remember it. See, that's how Charuchandra Dutt used to be very annoyed. He got angry with Sri Aurobindo. Why he left the freedom movement and went away. He tore away all his letters. The only thing he kept was the Gita, which was given by Sri Aurobindo to him. That to the Gita which Sri Aurobindo used to read in the jail. And he got very annoyed. Chief has gone away. And he is getting more and more angry as his wife says, you go and meet him once. No, I'll not go. So, he wrote to Dilip Kumar Roy. And Dilip Kumar Roy tells him, do you know some Charuchandra Dutt? He said, oh, Charu. Ah, he is one of those men who stand in the front rank of humanity with whom we have fought the battle of the ages. But in this life, I couldn't call him my own preoccupations, I suppose. He started crying when he came to know this is what chief has written about me. So his wife tells him, see, you are a fool. I told you, you go. So he goes there and says, everything is fine, but I can't touch the feet of a French woman. Die-hard revolutionary. How can I touch the feet of a French woman? Shubhinda says, why? So he tells a different reason. He says, I am backache. So I can't bend. Shubhinda says, oh, that's very easy. The mother will stand few steps above. So you don't have to bend. Play with the Lord. But when he goes there, he is having this in mind. Mother, you are a great lady. Everybody is saying nice thing, but you see, don't expect me to have all that respect and all that. I just cannot. I am so. All this is thinking. Then he writes, but when I stood before her, everything I forgot. See, this is how divine is not seeing outwardly. And there is a sannyasi who wants to go and meet, and Sri Aurobindo says, no. He insists. He says, I'll start shedding all my clothes till I meet him because Parashakti has sent me. And this told to Sri Aurobindo, sir, Parashakti has sent him. Sri Aurobindo says, very inconvenient Parashakti. And he starts climbing and runs away after a few steps because he suddenly experiences such a dazzle. He says, he is right. And when Sri Aurobindo is asked that, what did you see? He says, there was nothing in him except the ego of having gone to the four Tirthas. You would see. But look at Charuchandra, look at so many whom we would. That's what regarding Dilip Kumar Roy. So, Dilip Kumar Roy, whom Eshadi sees and says, him too, he is with you. He says, yes, why not? I cherish you as a friend and a son. But if you look at the outward personality, so divine's ways are like that. If we observe a happening, we judge and explain it from the result and from a glimpse of its most external constituents, circumstances or causes. This is how we judge. This is good or bad and the immediate circumstances. But each happening is the outcome of a complex nexus of forces which we do not and cannot observe, because all forces are to us invisible. But they are not invisible to the spiritual vision of the infinite. Some of them are actualities working to produce or occasion a new actuality. You may think, are ye snare mujhe kahan se aa gaya? This is a snare. But he is the one, because new actualities have to emerge. That's how he describes in one of his thoughts and aphorism. That when I fell in the mud, I got annoyed and looked at Krishna. Then I looked around, then I saw Krishna smiling, then I pardoned him. But then I fell again. I looked with the corner of my eyes, but this time I had no choice but to pardon him. See, some are actualities in the future, which is taking place now. Some are possibles that are near to the pre-existent actuals and in a way included in this aggregate. But there can intervene always new possibilities that suddenly become dynamic potentials and add themselves to the nexus. So this is a constant process going on. Absolutely new thing which you never imagined, never thought, never wanted. And it comes your way. So that's why surrender is so important, because there is no way human mind can understand why this happened. It's only in the long term effect, sometimes over life, that one understands. But the divine is seeing. He is the all witnessing. So best is to give back to the divine. I don't know. But when it happens, let me just take this and everything as an opportunity to grow closer to you. That's the only thing we can do as on the path of yoga. That let everything become a means, a joy of your revealing yourself in countless ways, and that is within us, our hands. Some are possibles that are, okay. And behind all, so all this is still only the play of forces, and behind all are imperatives, or an imperative which these possibilities are laboring to actualize. What is the imperative? The supramental real idea. It is laboring to realize, and it will do anything. It is not bound by any of our moral notions or ethical ideas to realize and fulfill it. So he says there are imperatives. Moreover, out of the same nexus of forces, different results are possible. What will come out of them is determined by a sanction which was no doubt waiting and ready all the time, but seems to come in rapidly to intervene and alter everything. A decisive divine imperative. So the same set of circumstances may lead one to rise there and the other to slip. And behind both, there is the working of the divine, who is leading each one in his own way. So there is nothing like fixed process that, sir, I have put so much, I get this much. No, it doesn't work. He is still not revealed how it happens, but he is telling us at least that at least we should understand the data that is available before the divine is so much more. That's why the mother would say, never ask for justice, always ask for grace. If you ask for justice, you won't know where you stand. So when people say, oh, Kali Mata should come and destroy this enemy, first she will come to us and say, okay, let me deal with you first. Are you ready to be dealt? Then you have no choice but to say, mother, take this fellow. After dealing with you, she will go where she has to go and deal in her own way. So she says, always invoke grace. Why? Because the divine, the immortal, sees not as we vainly see. That's the line in Savitri. So, and that's why we cannot make any fixed rule. Some people make a fixed rule about anything, which includes coming to ashram. It is a possibility. It will not necessarily give the same result in everyone. Or staying outside. It's all beyond our, but what we can do is to keep aligning ourselves. That is within our hands. All this our reason cannot grasp, because it is the instrument of an ignorance with a very limited vision and a small stock of accumulated and not always very certain or reliable knowledge, and because too it has no means of direct awareness. For this is the difference between intuition and intellect, that intuition is born of a direct awareness, while intellect is an indirect action of a knowledge which constructs itself with difficulty out of the unknown. So that's why what most people have done who have approached the divine, they cannot understand this infinite and its action. So they have said divine is all good. Now all these statements are true. But the moment you say only, then there is a problem. So the divine is all good, and it is man who has destroyed. So man is responsible for all that is evil and ugly. So basically, man's karma in previous life. Now that's like entering a blind cul-de-sac. I don't know what karma, and it raises many questions. For example, a good man suffering means he was a bad person in previous life, but he has undergone a radical conversion and he is a good man. Then why is he suffering? After all, he has undergone a change. And vice versa. I mean, I use the story of the Pandavas and the Kauravas. So it's logically not tenable that this is how it, there is something which is missing. Shobindu says, no, the buck stops with the infinite. He is responsible for his creation. He is not throwing it onto the creator, onto the creation. So, it is evident that such a consciousness and will need not act in harmony with the conclusions of a limited reason or according to a procedure familiar to it and approved of by our constructed notions or in subjection to an ethical reason working for a limited and fragmentary good. We may tell him anything. We may say, you are cruel, you are torturer, you are no good. He's not bothered. He says, these two I have planned in you. You have to go through this phase of contradicting me or contradicting your own truth, because it will take you through a shorter. That's why one should not interfere in another person's evolutionary process. So he says that, well, he doesn't fit into our idea of immediate, limited and fragmentary good. It might and does admit things. This is worth, reading. It might and does admit things deemed by our reason irrational and unethical because that was necessary for the final and total good and for the working out of a cosmic purpose. Krishna explained. QED. And Shobindu says something like this in Essays on the Gita. That God is not busy proving a point. I'm a great moralist. See, I'm a great moralist. You tell him you are the most immoral person. He says, okay. I know what I'm doing. I'll do it my way. And he does it. See, through the Mahabharata. Look at the final result. Immediate results, if you see, you say, oh my God. But then when you see the long-term result, Shobindu says, Shri Krishna saved India through the Mahabharata. Also because a new age has to be ushered in, which was the age of the Vaishya type and the Shudra type. Because that was an age of Kshatriyas. Dwapar is the heroic age. So in the heroic age, all these energies, tremendous Kshatriya energies, they had to be dimmed, eclipsed. Otherwise, the other type will never come up. The man with the tool and the hammer will not come up. So he dims the knowledge. He dims the Brahminical tendencies. He dims the Kshatriya age. And then he makes this rise. So age of commerce and industry, science and technology at the service of man, commerce and industry, the laborer, all this age he had to usher in. And then now, because a new age is coming up, so he takes all this and creates a new type where all these four tendencies are together. So these are his ways. So he doesn't act according to human intelligence. We may like it or we may not like it. So that's what I keep saying. Shobindu has changed the age. You may say that why today's children are like this and that. And you may cry. You may complain. It doesn't matter. He knows what he is doing. Try to understand his will and align to it. That's the only thing given to us. Try to align to his will, to understand his will, to receive his will and express it. But if you try to understand, by his will he can make us understand, of course. So that's a different thing. What seems to us irrational or reprehensible, now see, he's using very hard terms, or reprehensible in relation to a partial set of facts, motives, desiderata, might be perfectly rational and approvable in relation to a much vaster motive and totality of data and desiderata. May seem to our limited reason is irreprehensible. So even about ashram, often I say, and the same thing I would say to Auroville in a certain extent, but definitely when people say about the ashram, say, don't try to understand it. It's not a human creation. It's the divine mother's creation. At least that much can go into the buddhi, it will be fine. Play your role, do your bit, which may be saying my way, whatever. But know that this is the divine mother's creation. It doesn't work according to human laws and human ways of life. But something else. So there is a very famous saying about the ashram. Again, some people who wanting to come, that in the ashram when you come, you will get the experiences, you will meet the people whom you are meant to meet. Somebody else will have a different line of experience. There is no such standard. Somebody else will be carried on, you know, hands of lotus. Somebody else will start feeling, oh my God, I am getting a knock here and a blow there. And the same, sometimes from the same person. So it's very amazing because this is the, not just Devanagari, but Divyanagari. It doesn't act according to any human conformity or standards. So, reason with its partial vision sets up constructed conclusions which it strives to turn into general rules of knowledge and action, and it compels into its rule by some mental device or gets rid of what does not suit with it. An infinite consciousness would have no such rules. It would have instead large intrinsic truths. See, that's what he told to Amrita. And someone said that, why are you giving such a long robe? The disciples can hang at the end of it. He says, you cannot create Superman without it. Such a long rope. Rope to hang yourself at the end. Rope to make any amount of mistakes. Just mind-boggling. But he can do it because he's infinite. He calls the last cards. He knows the imperative truth. So he takes through everything. It would have instead, so what is the data that the divine has, the infinite consciousness has? It would have instead large intrinsic truths governing automatically conclusions and result, but adapting them differently and spontaneously to a different total of circumstances, so that by this pliability and free adaptation, it might seem to the narrower faculty to have no standards whatever. Divine is saying, I have no standards. Yet all standards have come out of me. All the dharmas have come out of me. Yet to his disciple he says, Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja. This is invigorating. It is shocking to the human mind, but it is liberating also to the human mind. Because it immediately frees us from all our conceptions, which we realize they are all narrow mental conceptions, nothing else. So he is leading us to the freedom of the infinite. In the same way, we cannot judge of the principle and dynamic operations of infinite being by the standards of finite existence. What might be impossible for the one would be normal and self-evidently natural states and motives for the greater, freer reality. Now this creates a big confusion. Sir, what do we do? He'll solve everything. He understands us because he has become us. So he says that by the reason basically you cannot understand. Why? Because if we concentrate only on one aspect and treat it as the whole, we illustrate the story of the blind man and the elephant. Each of the blind inquirers touched a different part and concluded that the whole animal was some object resembling the part of which he had had the touch. So we know that Sri Aurobindo, when he was going in a rickshaw to receive his sister Sarojini, and Amrita was accompanying him, and Sri Aurobindo said something, and Amrita is, because Sri Aurobindo, it looks like Himalaya, impersonal, mighty, majestic, grand. So he says, sir, I did not know you have so much compassion in your heart. Your heart is so tender, because he said something about the rickshaw puller. Sri Aurobindo gives him a shocker. And with the, and do you know, with the same compassion I can thrust a dagger if that be the need. And he says, end of the story. With the same compassion if that be the will. What a plasticity. It's not like he's saying that divine is all possible. You cannot limit in this way or that way or this or that. Page 346, second line. The infinite is at once an essentiality, a boundless totality, and a multitude. All these have to be known in order to know truly the infinite. And they can be known. The only way they can be known is by becoming one with the divine. No other way. And that is possible. That's what Shrivindu wants us to integral union with the divine. To see the parts. Now see, there's something very beautiful he is going to say. To see the parts alone and the totality not at all or only as a sum of the parts is a knowledge but also at the same time an ignorance. This is Isha Upanishad. Andam tama pravishanti and sambhuti asambhuti, but he is saying it now in his own beautiful way. So to see the parts, supposing I see all the parts, it is a kind of knowledge. But he says it's also a kind of ignorance. Why? So, to see the totality alone and ignore the parts is also a knowledge and at the same time an ignorance. So we see the parts. This happened, that happened. That. He says, yeah, it's a kind of knowledge that somebody had a viral fever because he was in contact with somebody who had a viral fever. It's a knowledge. It's also an ignorance. But you see just the totality and all this is irrelevant, unimportant. He says that is also a kind of ignorance. And now he is going to give us a real bouncer. But best way to face Shrivindu's bouncer is to say hit it. Hit your head. So at least the head opens and see what he is going to say. For a part may be greater than the whole. Because it belongs to the transcendence. Transcendence can act in a part and change the entire totality of things, as Shri Krishna we see doing in the Kurukshetra war. Arjuna is just one of the players. But see, he bends the rules, tweaks everything. Because at that point of time, this part is embodying the will of the transcendent. So that's the importance of each part. So there is, it's not just totality or some part. Each of us has a role. There's a beautiful line in Ilion. So line is that actually sends a message to the Priam, the king. His message is very simple. He says, ask your daughter, give your daughter in hand to me. I'll switch sides. Very simple. He says, and if I switch sides, I can tell you the entire Greek tribes will not stand against. They were not Greeks then. He said, all these Ithacans will not stand because they know me. They know I'm a killing machine. I stand by your side and none of them will do anything. So this man who is a messenger of Achilles, he's an old man, feeble man. And he's carrying the message. He doesn't know how to tell the king that this is what this man has told. So Shivindu writes, frail and mortal, frail and old, he carried in his feeble, trembling hands the destiny of a nation. Now you see, what is the role of this man? What was he carrying? The destiny of a nation. There would have been no Trojan War had they had actually switched. And everybody knew this. But he refuses. And then actually says, okay, I'll fight. See how it works. If you look at it, it looks so silly. Hari, he could have given the hand to Achilles, such a nice person. But the beauty is, it is the divine who wanted Troy to fall. It is already decided. And if you look at it, Troy was such a developed civilization. They were very developed, culturally, everywhere. These fellows were rowdies, except Odysseus and few others. Imagine Achilles taking the time, the dead body of Hector, noble man, and roaming around, all around 7 days, he would not let go. And Priam has to come and say, please release his dead body. Very noble, cultured, refined. And these people bring them down. Now you ask, what is God's will in all this? So Sri Aurobindo writes, because it had developed at the expense of all life around it. Nature does not like it. It brought down everything and then it created a composite culture, which today we call as Greek. They don't like it. They like to call it as Hellenic. Hellas. That's how. That's why Sri Aurobindo says that the siege of Troy created Hellas. So they created a new culture, sprang up. A culture where the average person had a sense of beauty. So that time people would say, such a fine people. So that, because he has all the data, he knows that they will go down, they will come up again. Hector, okay, doesn't matter. He has to go 7 days like this. Then he will come back here, he will be Dilip Kumar Roy. He writes it in Records of Yoga. Hector, Dilip Kumar Roy. When Dilip Kumar Roy came to know it, he was very annoyed. I was dragged around. But see, and why Sri Aurobindo writes, whom I cherish as my son, he is the man who gave his life to save Paris. Who is Sri Aurobindo? Look at the game then. He gave his life because Achilles was challenging Paris. He said, you are the culprit, and Paris wants to go. He is not a coward. But Hector says, no, this is invariable death. I'll go. And he knows he's going to die. There is no match to Achilles. And he goes and gives his life. And who was Menelaus? You'll be surprised. Look at how the game divine plays on large scale. So Sri Aurobindo is Paris, who has run away with Helen. Helen is wife of Menelaus. And Menelaus was Nalinida. Imagine the play and its magic and its mystery. That's the role he has played then. And here is the role when Sri Aurobindo says, if Nalini does not understand my yoga, then who understands my yoga? He is his Manasputra. So even in Mahabharata there are stories. There is a story where Arjun fights Sri Krishna. Hanuman swallows Sudarshan Chakra. He swallows Trishul, the only person. Three deadly weapons which nobody can challenge are Trishul, Sudarshan Chakra and Narayani Astra. But Hanuman challenged it. Not only challenged, he swallowed the Trishul and Shiva has to tell him, please bring it out. Now if you see, he is Shiva's Ansha. He is playing his role in that great game. When you look at life that way and play the great game, true and faithful to our own inner calling, which is what is Swabhava, where there is the impulsion of the divine Shakti, then it is something so wonderful. That's what Sri Aurobindo is revealing, that don't try to understand by the truth of a moment or by our own moral and ethical standard that these are good guys, these are bad guys, and there is a fight going on. Okay. So he says, for a part may be greater than the whole because it belongs to the transcendence. To see the essence alone, because it takes us back straight toward the transcendence and negates the totality and the parts to a penultimate knowledge. But here too there is a capital ignorance. So you may say all Mahabharata war is essentially Krishna's will. Okay. Krishna is in everybody, but this too is an ignorance. You know what, where he is leading to? He is leading to a term used in the Gita. Samagram Mam. In all my parts and totality. And then Sri Krishna says, Vasudevam Sarvamiti Samahatma Chadurlabha. It's not as simple as seeing God everywhere. But the mystery and the magic. A whole knowledge must be there. That's what he's saying. There is a whole knowledge. Samagram Mam. And the reason must become plastic enough to look at all sides, all aspects, and seek through them for that in which they are one. This is the supramental thought. And he says it's possible. Even rationally we can begin to understand something of the play, but reason has to become very wide, very plastic, very supple, open to that higher consciousness, the divine, and discover that truth in which they all become one. evil and good are valid below the overmind. But the moment they go into the supermind, they fuse. That's what mother said at one place. So the disciple is confused. So then she added later on, they change their character. Good becomes, human good becomes the eternal good. And evil itself undergoes a change and a transmutation. That's why see Sri Aurobindo in Durga Strot, what does he say? Mother Durga, give to us the strength. Asure Bala, strength of the titans, the intelligence of the gods. We think of them as opposites, and at one point they are needed. But everything carries within itself something of the divine, and that is manifesting itself. Actually, if we understand it, the divine manifesting himself through all the apparent oppositions, which are also part of the play, oppositions also are part of the play, needed part. So then we should not be confused, but I have to do based on my inner calling. But this calling is not something fixed for all times. The divine himself says, what if failure suits him better, his purpose? He will choose that path. So there is nothing as the psychic. That's why it's so important to find the psychic. Because then there is the guidance which comes, and from there one acts. And psychic guidance is a very subtle and plastic guidance. It doesn't act according to the human logic and reason. This is the only place where something, because the supermind is here. That's why mother says the only way you can glimpse something of the supermind is through the psychic door. Otherwise it's impossible. So he says, with this we'll stop. He says, a whole knowledge must be there. He's not leaving us in that state of perplexity. Must be there. And that's what Shri Krishna says, Samagram Mam. He says, nobody knows. And of course he gave all this. He's giving the baton to Sri Aurobindo. So Shri Krishna himself, enlarged edition, upgraded version. So, and the reason must become plastic enough to look at all sides. That's why I think many experiences of life are only to make this reason plastic. The moment you say life should be like this, this is how it is, mother acts like this, sure enough, after some time, ye kya ho gaya? Because she will make sure that all the limited formations in which we have caught our mind, very few can sustain. That's why Sri Aurobindo says, it's why the journey becomes difficult. Because if we bind ourselves to very narrow formulas, it doesn't work. The divine exceeds all formulas, and yet all formulas and rules have come from him. So he, this last bit, a whole knowledge must be there. And the reason must become plastic enough to look at all sides, all aspects, and seek through them for that in which they are one. And very simple example with which he can stop. Some say Rama did very bad when he killed Vali from behind. Others try to explain him. Some say Ravan did very bad by sending Sita away to the forest. Some try to explain it. But what is the total knowledge where you say Rama is an avatar? And whatever he does, whatever the divine does, that's how we have grown up in that culture. And mother gives exactly this example. She says, whatever the divine does, with regard to Rama, she says, there is an aphorism, Rama killed Vali. Who shall say whether he did good or bad? But this we know, that he acted divinely. Now this is an element which completely goes out. And we all have grown up, at least many of, I mean, fortunate to be born in this Adbhut land of India, that we have grown up in that. We didn't question till woke started questioning, and people say feminist, anti-feminist. We started looking for answers. But as children, Rama is God. What he did, he did. And there is a splendor and majesty in all that he did. And whatever he did is good. That's the end of the story. Kalyan Shraddha. So he says that you can know it only through a reason that is plastic and supple enough to look at all sides. So Rama, when we look at Rama, we cannot brand him based on one or other aspect. You have to see Rama as a totality. When Michael Madhusudan Dutt wrote something on Meghnadvad, and he blamed Rama as being cowardly because of the Wali Vadh. So Dilip Kumar Roy has the audacity to write to Sri Aurobindo. Sri Aurobindo says, of all the things you may throw on Rama, the last thing you can ever say is, Valmiki is Rama as cowardly. Sri Krishna says among the Paurushayam Rama, he says that the last thing you can even imagine, but people have imagined, seeing one aspect or the other. So he says you cannot do that. So what is important? It's about human beings also. We see one aspect or the other, but the divine sees in the essence and the totality, the past and the future and the entire set of forces acting from within. So he says a whole knowledge must be there and the reason must become plastic enough to look at all sides, all aspects and seek through them for that in which they are one. So Tulsidas says, Ram Saman Prabhu Nahi Kahu. That's all he says. He says, I cannot speak. You may say good or bad, let the world argue. Ram Saman Prabhu Nahi Kahu. I cannot say or think or speak of the Lord any other as Rama. So that's the whole gist of it. We'll continue tomorrow the wonderful journey. This logic of the infinite, so it has to be step by step. Can't rush them.